right. We are back with another Bitcoin VC series here, which we're trying to develop to give a little bit of insight about what Bitcoin venture capitalists are looking at in the space, maybe some tips for founders on what they can do, or just kind of a window into the madness that is Bitcoin VC land. So I'm lucky to be joined here today with Nico Leshuga, I hope I said that right, from Ego Death Capital, okay? And Ego Death Capital, hands down, has the best Bitcoin VC firm name in the entire business. So they already have the coolest name, right? So they probably have the coolest people. So first off, Nico, welcome, and how you doing today?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on, Muzz. It's a pleasure to talk to you. Always look for any opportunity I can to jump on the horn with you. Love talking venture capital, love talking Bitcoin, love to just shoot the shit with you. It's a lot of fun.
So I appreciate that. And I like that because Ego Death is one of the few Bitcoin VCs who actually engage us misfits over here and are curious about what we're looking at. So I appreciate that. He's probably phoning in today from some super secretive bunker. I'm not sure exactly. Where are you today?
I am actually outside the city today. Normally work out of New York City, but outside today working from home. So that super secretive bunker is not that secretive.
All right, cool. And we're going to get into that too. And we're going to talk a little bit about that in a minute. But just so people have kind of an overview for what's going on here, this is Ego Death Capital. You can follow them on Twitter at Ego Death. All right. This is Mr. Nico. Okay. That's at Nico score under Leshuga. Okay. He's also a closet Taylor Swift fan. So if anyone was curious, and this is Ego Death's website here. So we're going to get into a little bit about their portfolio companies, maybe some things that we share together. But first off, Nico, how did you get into venture capital? What did you do before you were focused fully on the Bitcoin space? And kind of maybe just a little bit of an origin story on Ego Death, how it came together. You know, everyone thinks Ego Death and it's always Jeff Booth. But the fact of the matter is there are other partners there that do a lot of the heavy lifting. So you want to chat about your background and kind of the origins of Ego Death?
That'd be great. Thanks, Muzz. I'm Nico Leshuga. I'm one of the founding general partners at Ego Death Capital. My two other partners are Jeff Booth and Andy Pitt. Previously, I started my career off in private equity, predominantly looking at projects in emerging and frontier markets. We were doing some project finance in Western Africa, some other projects in Latin America. And I think that was my first like realization that money was broken, in that a lot of those projects had FX components to that. So you're taking Western financial funds and then you have to convert to the local currency, and there's typically a currency hedge. There's a degree of inflation. It's probably a decade ago, in those areas, and you're having to account for that. And it just seemed so inefficient. I left private equity after a number of years to be an entrepreneur. I had this side project making hot sauce. When we were living in Brooklyn in Williamsburg, my wife and I would go to the old Pfizer building and from 8 p.m. to 2 o'clock in the morning, make hot sauce a couple times a month. And that business just took off, did really, really well. And it allowed me to be an operator in an area where there are pretty thin margins. The industry is pretty antiquated. And so we did our own spin on that. And so brought the like financial background, financial discipline from this PE background with my wife's branding expertise. And we kind of launched this company and have done some very, very cool things with it. I would say at the same time period, I was always still looking at what was going on in the financial world and fascinated with the world and looking for any type of like opportunity as an individual. Jeff Booth and I had met a number of years ago and had stayed in pretty close contact. And any time period where I would have, I would say, a significant business decision, I would reach out to Jeff. We became pretty good personal friends. And at the same time period, Andy Pitt and I had met through this group summit series. Actually, Jeff and I had met like both of them. And what we started to see around 2020 was that there was this huge, we felt like, opportunity that people didn't appreciate within Bitcoin. And that, yes, there was value to like Bitcoin as the asset. And that had been pretty well explained by some of the big thinkers within the space, and we could all get on board with that. But that there was going to be this coming wave of companies that were investable, building on top of Bitcoin. And it's funny, Muzz, this is where you sit. This is the space, and it's how why we get along so well. And so I put Jeff and Andy together, and we started to talk about what it would look like to stand up a professional vehicle, investment vehicle, a venture fund, to invest in these companies building on top of Bitcoin. And we took a jump. The market responded pretty well to it. And we've been doing it now for, I think, almost a couple of years. And it's been a wild ride. It's a quite rewarding thing.
Okay. So first off, I want to try some of that hot sauce. Okay. And yeah. I think that the Bitcoin community needs some Ego Death branded hot sauce badly. So I hope that at the next conference or the next maybe table or booth or whatever you guys have for Ego Death, I really hope that there are bottles of hot sauce for maybe 2,100 sats a pop. I can't wait to try that.
We've been doing it like at certain things. I feel like it's been making its way into the space. PubKey is going to be launching a hot dog with the hot sauce. Wolf has a number of bottles of the hot sauce in the office. So it's little by little, all of my worlds are like connecting.
So what you're saying is next week when I'm in New York, I'm getting some hot sauce.
There you go. Yeah, that's it, boss.
All right, cool. So definitely want to talk about portfolio companies and leading rounds. You guys have led, I think, most of the rounds that you've participated in that have all been publicly announced. But what are you seeing right now in Bitcoin VC land? What's the temperature like? Are people investing? What's the appetite? You know, whether you are or aren't raising yourselves for another fund or so, but just the general temperature when you're talking to LPs or what you're surveying from valuation standpoint as far as young entrepreneurs, has there been some normalness coming back into the market? Kind of what are you seeing out there?
I would say, like, really, really high level, what we're seeing is that the valuations within the market in general have compressed, money not being free anymore for a lot of these like broad venture capital funds. They're not deploying into these later stage rounds. So venture capital, like, just taking a pretty high level, I'm not sure how sophisticated the audience is within the space, but it's stage-based financing. So you accomplish one thing, you go out, you raise more funds. You accomplish another thing, you go out and you raise more funds. In the past, like, year and a half, 2 years ago, it was a little bit more elastic as to what that accomplishment would look like. And so people were willing to write checks in a growth space that typically, like, in the past wouldn't happen. I would say that we've more so shifted to the space where companies, like, revenue matters a lot, path to profitability matters a lot, having product market fit matters a lot, and things that have a high degree of speculation and low degree of real-world utility are tougher to get funded. That said, like, those projects can still get funded. They're typically, though, right now being seen in like a seed. So very early stage, pre-seed or seed companies. They're less in those like growth stages that you start to see a company tap into some significant revenue. That's what we're seeing within the marketplace. I would say, like, as far as Bitcoin VCs, there are a number that are writing checks right now into Bitcoin companies. The generalist venture capitalists, I would say, like, right now, and part of it's just the time of the year. We're getting into Thanksgiving next week, and some of them will take the rest of the year off from writing new checks or diligencing deals. But there is not many generalist VCs that we're seeing that are writing into the space at the pace that they were called a year and a half ago. It's quite an interesting time. I think the best entrepreneurs, best companies are still getting backed. They're getting a lot of interest. We're seeing deals right now that will be oversubscribed, so meaning there's more capital interest than there is space in those deals. And it's a fun time, I think, to deploy capital, because you can really take your time with certain deals that doesn't really happen when we're in like the height of a bull market.
Boy, isn't it nice having a professional on the channel? Isn't it nice having somebody who knows what they're doing? Wow. Okay, so first off, you're talking about stage-based financing, okay? And you explained that beautifully, right? I talk a lot about milestone-based financing, okay? But now with the stage-based financing, okay, it's important to note here, just to recap for everyone, that the pre-seed and seed rounds, the early stage stuff, has been faring better than a lot of the late stage stuff. That's ultimately what you're saying, right? The growth rounds, the sort of the series B's and above.
It's 100%. So there hasn't really been much of a downturn in the, call it, deal count in those pre-seed and seed rounds. The valuations have probably been compressed, meaning, so what do I mean by that? That means that the value of the company at those rounds, and there's a number of different ways that we evaluate, like that you back into value, whether it's a cap on a certain round or whether you're actually pricing it. But those valuations in the pre-seed and seed, I think, have been compressed. So they're lowering down, but the deal count is still there. So companies are still being able to go out and raise a pre-seed and seed round. Those growth stage, so like Series A and on, have become very tough. And so if companies have been basing their growth by the ability to kind of re-raise funds every 18 months in those like growth rounds, and not having really like healthy looking financials, that's been a very, very tough market for those companies.
Cool. And just a reminder, you can stock all your favorite Bitcoin VCs by scanning that QR code there. All right. So let's dig into a couple of fun things here and let's have a look at this beautiful, really cool looking website here. And some of these publicly listed portfolio companies. So Fedimint, I believe you guys led the round for that, right?
Yeah, we co-led the seed and then we led the Series A.
So Sinota, that was also a lead, correct?
Yeah, we led Sinota.
And Breeze, that was also a lead, correct? We
led Breeze, yeah.
And Relay as well, right?
We led Relay, yeah.
Wow, 4 of 4. Led them all. All right. So we're definitely going to dig in there on leading versus following on or participating in all that. And then we have something really interesting here, which is Wolf. Okay. A wolf in wolf's clothing. This is the New York based accelerator that is, you know, fairly secretive, I suppose. Not much knows what's going on in there on the inside. But what's going on? Why did you decide to invest in Wolf? How's it been so far? And kind of what was the thinking behind that?
We felt like in this space, a lot of times companies would come to us and they were lacking like 1 to 2 things before they were investable for us. So we're typically looking for a company that probably has a degree of a product out there, has some type of customer base. We're typically not the first check into businesses. Now we are early investors, but we felt like there was a lacking of, call it, tools within this space that would fix those companies or give them the right partners, product market, like direction, strategy moving forward before they were investable to us. And we felt like the Stone Ridge NYDIG brand, so Wolf is the product of Stone Ridge NYDIG, and that type of professionalism in New York and the connections that would come from that and bringing in cohorts of 8 teams at a time every 4 months, 3 or 4 months, could create a pretty significant pipeline for the Bitcoin ecosystem of new companies and could create companies that were much more interesting and stronger and a higher degree of what we felt like they would have with success. All this stuff is to be determined. There hasn't been much liquidity, so exits within the space, exits or acquisitions. So all this right now is a belief that we can back into with some degree of how we feel internally. But Wolf, the thought process was there. Kelly Brewster, who's the CEO of Wolf, we think is incredible. He does a really, really fantastic job with the teams of taking them on 8 weeks from potentially an idea to something where they have a direction of where they're moving forward. We've had a lot of fun as a team at Ego Death of spending time with those teams. Andy and I have spent time with every single cohort of teams. It's been a lot of fun to talk to certain teams that are in there, to look at them from an investment standpoint, to develop the space, to see if there are any ways that we can help them. We think that the this over the next like couple years is going to be a quite interesting pipeline of Bitcoin companies, and a nice signal, I think, to the market as to really, really strong companies coming into the space.
And when you invest in Wolf, when you're an LP in Wolf, you get to go to their office and drink the Nespresso anytime you want. That is included, correct?
I mean, the Nespresso's good, but there's like secret coffee spots within that office, and I think that those coffee spots within the office are actually far better than the Nespresso. They're hidden around corners, but you could find them.
Very cool. So let's just bring everyone up to speed here, just in case they don't know. And believe it or not, a few people didn't know. I actually encouraged two specific founders to apply previously, and I can't talk about how well it went for them. But yeah, so not everyone knows to apply for this, right? So this is similar to YC, right? This is a YC for Bitcoin, if you understand the kind of standard accelerator model. Okay, they make a capital investment here of 250K for a percentage, of course. They bring you to New York, they put you up in an apartment. It's probably all in all maybe 12 weeks or so, give or take, maybe eight to 12 weeks of being live in person in New York City, which I'm a New Yorker in my heart. The energy there is fantastic. I wouldn't trade that for anything. And you get to see who's roaming around that office, right? With their curriculum, their programming. You get to hang out with people like Nico. There's a demo day at the end that kind of culminates it. I'm not cool enough to ever get invited to the Wolf demo days, but I hear that there's a demo day at the end, and it's really cool. So if you're a Bitcoin entrepreneur, founder, you're building something, keep an eye on the program and maybe apply for the next cohort. I believe this is the third one right now that's happening. Is that right?
Yeah, we're in the midst of cohort three right now. I just echo everything that you said. We think it's a really eye-opening space to be in. We think that the development that can happen from a team standpoint is pretty incredible, and the access down the hall to certain strategic connections that are willing to sit down, take the time with you, is probably not something that you're going to get anywhere else.
Right. Really sweet, man. Okay, so that's a bit on Wolf. And by the way, the ticket for that investment, I don't think that that was really cheap, right? Not many of our pikers could afford that one. But that's really cool. Okay, so then we share actually two of these four investments, which I love. I mean, we've invested in Breeze, we love Roy a lot, and then Julian, of course, and Relay is on fire. And they're very vocal about breaking records. Relay's doing great. All right, cool, man. So let's talk about like what you're looking at now. Is there anything particularly that's catching your eye? Is there something in the ego death focus that maybe is a particular area that you're concentrating on? Like with, some people are all over the place. Some people, they don't invest in gaming, for example, or maybe they focus on infrastructure or they have a particular area. What is the general thesis, just so people know not to waste your time, maybe, with what you're looking at?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think that this is super crucial. So we wanted to be super targeted as a fund when we came out. So we wanted to, I think, like Muzz went back, and within those rounds, there are five portfolio companies that are just closed there. There's a sixth, and we'll have a seventh in the next couple weeks. We wanted to be a leading ticket within those companies. So coming out, meaning we're placing the biggest capital ticket. We're helping the companies out strategically with their strategy. We've constructed Ego Death to be a strategic partner, what we like to call a smart money. So someone that's not just writing a capital ticket into a company, but is really there like a partner in the same way you would have a co-founder. Ego Death, though, is very specific as to what it invests in. So we do not invest in any mining. We don't invest in any hardware. We don't invest in any growth stage companies unless they're follow-on investments in our existing portfolio companies. So we invest in a pre-seed and seed stage, so pretty early stage within the companies. We generally write pretty decent sized tickets for those rounds. We have led every single deal that we've done, minus Wolf. So once we come in and we place capital into a company or agree to place capital into a company, what we end up having to do is we help the entrepreneur first order of business figure out who the rest of the capital providers are going to be in that round. And then we quickly shift from there as to what's going to be the strategic direction post-close for the company to take, hopefully from that stage to the next stage of funding. So it's our job to get them from there to the next stage and then be strategic with them as much as possible as we can from there. So we're generally looking for software companies that are being built on top of Bitcoin. Historically, right now within that space, the majority of those companies have some degree of Lightning component to them. So with Roy at Breeze, we believe one of the most talented developers within Bitcoin in general. And his SDK LSP is very, very fascinating to us and we think can explode adoption. Julian sits in a non-custodial place in and has access to Switzerland and the rest of Europe. And that becomes like really, really interesting with the collapse of all these custodial exchanges and what like Julian and Relay can do within that space. Fedi has that Lightning component right now in the way that federations are interoperable. And so that's been key right now. We have looked at other scaling technologies, and anytime there's anything new that comes out or is proposed on top of Bitcoin, whether that was Arc for a little bit or is BitVM right now is a pretty hot topic, we will look at the space. We generally want to see that there's a high degree of real world utility. So a company like Synoda disintermediating energy payments and streaming money for those energy payments becomes really interesting because it plays in on inefficiencies within a developed energy market. So just to recap, we're investing at a pre-seed and seed stage. We're leading those rounds. We are looking for some degree of application that has been developed at that time period. We're looking for software built on top of Bitcoin and real world utility and a path to some type of revenue so that you guys can go out and raise a Series A.
Are you lonely? Is there something missing in your life? Do you like to party? Well, listen up. It's time to spice up your life and start investing in Bitcoin companies. Lightning Ventures makes angel investing in Bitcoin startups fun and easy. Are you curious about the Bitcoin VC world? Care to join the anti-fiat Bitcoin venture capital universe? If yes, don't be shy. Fill out the application at ltng.ventures for a quick and custom onboarding. It's Bitcoin only, of course, because there is no second best. So join the motley crew of hackers, stackers, node runners, and meme masters. Whether you're a pleb or a whale, all are welcome. So groove with us. Be a part of it. Visit ltng.ventures to apply. We're gonna make it. Are you?
Okay, that was excellent. Okay, that was absolutely excellent and that was very clear. So the first thing, no mining, no hardware, no growth. So let me see if I can help your inbox. If you are working in the mining space, stop emailing Nico, okay? Just stop. Because all day long, all right, if you don't know the target of your VC, if you don't know their flavor, if you don't know what they're investing in and you're blindly emailing everyone everything, it doesn't look good, okay? So if you're in hardware, mining, or you're raising later rounds, they're not interested. They're not doing that. They're doing pre-seed to seed, okay? So one of the things that you said there was, you know, you've led all these rounds. I want to know if you're following on and with existing companies within that fund that you're deploying out of and how you view follow-on rounds. And then I also want to know, this is something that founders a lot of times don't know, is that sometimes you have to get to a certain percentage of ownership, okay, for each company that you invest in. Sometimes VCs need, say, 5 to 10%. With that first check in. Do you have a certain target percentage of ownership with each of these investments and following on? How do you view that?
I would say the ownership percentage, like we have certain things in the back of our mind. I think it's a little bit more elastic than other terms that you typically go out. Like we're not going to do a mining deal. We might flex on what we have in the back of our mind of an ownership percentage based on the entrepreneur, the company. The other part of following on, like we thought that this was pretty crucial. So if we're going to lead rounds, one of the things that we wanted to be able to do was be able to consistently like back companies that were doing well across different stages. And so while we won't invest initially on growth stages, like Fetty's the perfect example. So we placed an initial investment into Fetty. They achieved a lot from an application standpoint, and it just made a lot of sense to go out and for them to raise a Series A. We wanted to lead the round. So we created another, call it vehicle, to be able to allow that to happen in addition to using powder from our existing vehicle to deploy into. That one, I think in this type of space right now where the broader, call it venture capital funds that are more timid in deploying into Bitcoin companies right now, having follow-on capital, so half the fund reserved for those existing portfolio companies, gives peace of mind to those portfolio companies that if they execute on what they said they're going to execute on, there's capital there. We're going to continue to back those companies, back those investments. And it gives them a little bit of a margin of safety. Now, we don't have the capacity out of this fund to lead those growth rounds or all the growth rounds, but we can definitely be a capital provider, continue to be a capital provider and an investor in those follow-on investments. And we believe that's pretty crucial as a fund.
So as far as a percentage of ownership, I didn't know if I caught that there. Is there a single digit or a number that you guys try to target?
So we have something in like the back of our mind that we're like aiming for. But what I was saying is like, depending on the company, the founder from there, I think it's a little bit more flex in our minds. Like we do a fair amount of due diligence. I think we do a phenomenal job internally of due diligence as a fund, and certain entrepreneurs, different companies will be at different stages. And because of that, we might want exposure to them. And the valuation at that pre-seed and seed level is really more of an art than a science, is what we find. And in that way, we want to have a pretty concentrated portfolio from a capital exposure standpoint, but we don't want to miss a deal with a phenomenal entrepreneur based on a target ownership percentage. So there is like a degree of elasticity from that.
So we were talking about having a percentage of your fund reserved for follow-ons. That's obviously determined before you go out and raise the fund, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So that's part of the story that you're telling. So like our investors are LPs, so they're limited partners. So within a venture capital fund, you have general partners and then limited partners. The limited partners are the investors. And you go out with you go out to those limited partners and you give them the strategy that you're going to have for this fund. Here's the investment mandate that we're going after. Here's how everything is going to work internally with it. And here's the degree of initial investments and follow-on investments. Here's kind of the hypothetical composition of what that fund could look like from an exposure standpoint, how many companies you're going to have in it. And then you go out and you execute against it. And so it's been a lot of fun to have that plan a couple years ago and then watch us back into that as a fund.
So you were talking about one of the values that you do here when you invest is helping to fill the round, which is something that we do over here, right? If we're really have a strong level of conviction and we're investing, that's when I start bugging you guys bugging other people on trying to do that. So that's really cool. And my question is really around post-investment, kind of what do you do with these companies? How often is the communication take place? Kind of how involved are you? I mean, obviously you can only be involved as the company will allow you to be, but sort of how do you view that post-investment period and sort of how you manage that relationship afterwards?
That's a great question. And so one of my co-founders in the fund, founding general partners, Jeff Booth, that probably everybody's pretty familiar with within the space, Jeff has a great degree of experience with scaling companies and serving as, I call him the entrepreneur whisperer, in that I think he can unlock things in founders' minds that they don't even know exist. So one of the first orders of business that we do post-funding is we go over a plan with them as to what does the direction look like on a quarterly, yearly, and then a little bit farther out term basis for their company, setting strategic milestones for them, giving certain people responsibility for achieving those, and then we check in on those. Typically, we go back to that plan on a quarterly basis with the companies, and we find it's pretty helpful for them for marking like what they did well, what we can improve on, how we can evaluate projections, as projections are just that. On top of that, we like to make ourselves as available, or I guess not as available, depending on the entrepreneur, if they don't want that, as they want. And what that typically looks like from our fund standpoint is we're talking to our portfolio companies on a weekly or biweekly basis. These are quick calls, 30 minutes to an hour, if you want to have a longer call, of a catch up of, and one of the things that we like to start it is like, how can we help? What are you dealing with right now? Is there any strategic connection that we could have to make use of? Is there anything that you want to talk through? And that can take a bunch of different forms depending on where the company is at.
So, okay. And we could sit here and chat all day, but I want to talk about your timeline for how long it takes typically for you guys to actually complete an investment. So something comes on your radar, maybe you do a series of maybe three calls with them. I want to know between the first time that you get involved with the company to where you actually sign and wire, kind of how long that process takes. And then just an overall kind of window into the due diligence process that a founder could expect from Ego Death. Are you sending them a 5-page DDQ, right? Due diligence questionnaire of everything. Are you talking to existing customers for kind of like a reference check? Are you really doing bad actor checks on all these founders or whatever there is? Kind of how does that work as far as the timeline for how long it can take to close a check from Ego Death and the due diligence process?
We can flip diligence in a weekend, but it really requires the entire team to be all heads down on a company. What we end up finding is it takes a couple weeks or a month for us to go through the paces. And a lot of that is on the company standpoint. So you went into like, how do we evaluate deals initially? So we have an initial call with everybody and we're evaluating every little component of that. So we have a post-call evaluation. We're taking notes on that call. We're evaluating the company. We're evaluating the idea. We're evaluating the entrepreneurs. We're grading those. And then we're having a conversation internally as to what do we think about the company. Then we'll generally reach back out. We'll loop in. So typically, I'll take one. Andy will take one. Jeff will be on some. And then we'll loop in the other partners. So we'll bring in, if I've just been on one, I'll bring in Andy and Jeff. Or we'll loop in our advisors. So Preston, Lynn, Pablo, depending on how we want to evaluate it, we'll have a follow-up call to go over certain questions that we have. At that time period, we might have a pretty good feel as to the company is interesting from a potential investment direction. Depending on where we're at, if we think that the company is ready for or could be ready for an investment from us, what we will do is, like you hit on this, a diligence questionnaire. So we'll send across them a number of questions that we have. And I'll get into exactly like where those questions go, because some founders might be like, why am I getting all of these questions? We take those questions then, and then we evaluate the answers of those questions, and we form more questions based on those questions potentially. But really those answers, what they help us do is they help us think through this long form investment document called an investment memo. You at Lightning Ventures, all of your investment memos are public, I believe, for the things that you've done. So anybody that's listening to this can probably go to Lightning Ventures like Syndicate and look how Muzz has drawn up investments. So we like to think about it as what's the potential of the company? What are the risks associated with it? You went into like backgrounds of those founders, reference checks, customer checks. How do the rest of the ecosystem believe in them? What does success look like if we actually take this forward? How could this fail? Are there any ways to mitigate failure from there? How should we think about sizing an investment into this? So we take this long form investment document, and then one of the partners draws that up. And then what ends up happening is we call an investment committee. So it's a formal meeting where all of the partners get on. And this is my favorite part. So you come into it with an open mind, and that investment memo is disseminated to all the partners beforehand. In over a 30-minute to an hour period, everybody's briefed up on the company. There's just a discussion. And over that discussion, things might come up that no one thought of before, both from a risk or an opportunity type standpoint. At the end of the discussion, there's a vote. And basically a thumbs up, thumbs down. Are we moving forward with it? Any type of qualifications that you might have or considerations if you did move forward with it? If an investment is greenlit, then we're going to move to a term sheet. So it's document that stipulates like the high level terms of the deal with the company, and then to documents and closing those documents and wiring funds. If not, we're going to inform the company for whatever reason came out in there, why we can't invest now, and if there is an opportunity in the future and what we'd be looking for. The time period, I think, from that term sheet to making the investment, like, I think that probably doing this now a number of times, it can take anywhere from a couple weeks if it's a really, really clean deal. So something like the company's formed in Delaware, it's a pretty fresh company, there's no real hair on the deal, to 8 weeks. If it's a foreign entity, has a number of subsidiaries, there's a lot of like legal components to it. And that's just like the time period, and there's no real rushing that. Everybody wants it to go faster, but by time all of the documents are flipped back and forth from the lawyers and then funds are wired, that's typically what we see of like two to 8 weeks.
Okay, that was absolutely excellent. There was so much great insight there. I want to just address a couple things just to set the record straight. Our memos are not public. You do have to be vetted, applied, and approved for Lightning Ventures. And then you do get access to our deals or to be able to see them. We cannot make that public. Even though we exude raucous amateurism, there are certain rules that we need everyone to abide by with confidentiality and these things that we take as seriously as we can. So those are not public.
I meant public from the standpoint of your investors can see it. If you're investing right. Our investors never see our memos.
Right. And typically a deal memo would be internally, like Nico just said. You know, you would have your whole thesis as to why you're investing, that goes on file. Maybe your LPs see it. Certainly it is a good way to get your brain down on paper there. One thing that I thought was really cool about what you said was that you kind of operate independently, right? Like you might be talking to two or three founders, managing that relationship. And then it gets to that point where, you know, I'm maybe that individual partner writes that deal memo and is really pushing for that deal. They want to see it happen. They bring it to the other partners, and then they have that sort of round table, thumbs up, thumbs down discussion. That's super cool and very interesting.
Yeah. Thanks, man. I mean, like we typically like, there'll be an overlap and there'll be other partners like on the calls, but one partner is going to take that to committee and do exactly what you said, do the research from there. I think what's been really good about our team, and this I have heard doesn't exist in other venture capital funds, might not be the same, but that investment committee can be quite political in certain other funds. So I'll approve your deal if you approve my deal. For us, we just want the best deals. And so it's typically someone's doing the research, someone's writing up the memos, and then we're having an intelligent discussion to hopefully get the best deals and make the best decisions.
That is really cool. And then, of course, egos kind of come in when your ego death, right? I love it. When maybe your deal wasn't approved or shot down. And I've learned so far that no deal is worth getting upset over when they don't happen. Okay, so look once again on the team. I think I'm going to have Andy on here and we'll have a nice little chat as well. You briefly touched on some advisors, which this is about as good as it gets here. How engaged are advisors? You know, a lot of VC funds, they'll put maybe like a big Bitcoin podcaster in a deck, and that person is an advisor on that venture fund. That person has maybe never invested in a private company in his life. So how engaged are these advisors? Do they kind of sign off on every deal or give you their thoughts, or do you only pull them in when you think they can actually really add something material?
Our advisors are privy to every deal that we're bringing to that end stage. So we want to be respectful of their time. We're not going to have them involved in an initial meeting, but they are very, very involved whenever we're making an investment decision. So Preston, Lynn are on weekly calls with us. I was actually just speaking to Preston right before this on something. Pablo, we like to be respectful of his time, given that he's our tech advisor. Anything that technically... He's very, very well respected in the community. He's highly accomplished, phenomenal programmer. So anything that we have any questions on with that, we go to Pablo on. And then we loop Pablo in as part of the diligence process with whoever the tech lead is on those portfolio companies so that he can walk through what they're doing. And it's not to necessarily punch holes in it. It's more so to see can we add value? And is there something in the future here that we see? And we have to just check our boxes internally that we've done the right due diligence. But they're all very, very active. What we wanted to do was not have a page with, I think like you hit on, 20 to 30 advisors that are just like names on a page. We wanted people that were mission aligned with us and wanted to be active in our operation in the fund.
Cool. So I want to close on two quick things here. Otherwise, we're going to end up sitting all day, which actually wouldn't be that bad. That would be a fun day. Okay. So first off, you said something, which was you, if you're not going to invest in a company, that you inform the company why you're not investing. Is that true or false? That's what I heard you say.
Yeah, it's true. We pride ourselves on like clear communication and think we're all adults in a room and that we should be able to clearly communicate if we're not going to make an investment decision. And the, especially if we've brought it to a capital committee, like the entrepreneur deserves that. And so there can be some understanding as to why we can't make that decision now. Could we make it in the future? If there's anything we're looking for the entrepreneur to patch up within the company, yes, we as clear as possible without hopefully being harsh, want to at least be helpful in understanding.
Okay, so what Nico just said there is incredibly important, and I respect that greatly, because not every VC in the Bitcoin space does that, what he just says, and they don't value it. And I value it just as much as he does. And that is a very, very important part of the process, which is letting a founder or team or company or builder know why this isn't happening. And it can be a number of different things. It could even be bad timing. There might even be things that are out of control for a number of things, right? So it's really important to get that feedback. And I'm so glad to hear that you're doing it. And I hope that all other Bitcoin VCs who might have a policy to not provide feedback maybe realize that that is in turn not the not what's best, the way to handle it. Okay, finally, board seats and governance. Okay, that's kind of a fun thing. That's a little out of our league here at Lightning Ventures. You know, we've de facto led a couple of small allocations, but we're not really in that Series A term sheet world. Board seats, board observers. Can you talk about your position on board seats? Are they a pain? Do you fight for them? Did you how do you view that? And how does that come into the Series A sort of or the lead process?
We have a thought process in that if we don't believe in the entrepreneur, like we probably shouldn't be making an investment decision. And if we don't believe in the entrepreneur to lead that company, it's probably going to be pretty fatal. Now, there are certain growth stage companies where you're switching out. If the company has outgrown the expertise of, let's say, a founding CEO, and that's a very different other conversation. And normally the CEO is on page with changing that type of management. But from our standpoint, like governance, whether it's a board observer seat, meaning that you're in the room during board meetings, or actual board member, which means you have a vote for certain decision making that's brought to the board level, we like to think of ourselves as being supportive of the entrepreneur and the entrepreneur's vision and of the company. And so in the early stages, like those are going to be us supporting that type of vision, and the board meeting is going to take a different form where we're really going over like the next typically they're happening on a quarterly basis. The next quarter of we're reflecting on what's happened in the previous quarter. We're approving anything that's at a board level for the next quarter. And we're looking at what's the plan moving forward. We do not require them in our deals, but what we have found is that the founders typically want us to have them. And so we do have in a number of deals board seats or board observers or both. And one of the things that I would hit on with entrepreneurs with this is we've talked a lot about venture capital funds and the question making process that they can ask and go through. I think every single founder in this space talks to one another. They should be talking to one another. If you're thinking of taking VC money, you should talk to other companies that have taken VC money from those venture capitalists. And you should ask similar questions of the venture capitalists that they're asking to you. And the reason being is like, this is a long-term relationship and you want to make sure that you're getting in bed with somebody that you vibe with beyond just a capital standpoint. It's nice to get money in. Great ideas are going to get money in, but it's really important and really crucial for that entrepreneur to make sure the money matches them too. And so great ways to figure that out is by directly asking the VCs questions, which will then get into whether you want them on your board, whether you want them in the room while you're having board meetings, and then back channeling to other founders that have taken money from those VCs and asking those founders how the relationship goes.
Absolutely. It goes both ways, and you should 100% talk to other portfolio companies when you are about to get in bed with anyone. All right, cool, man. Well, listen, Nico, this was a lot of fun, and thanks for giving us some insight and a look into your world. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Moz. Thanks for having me. I really, really appreciate it.
All right. See you soon, buddy.
Thank you.